Hey, welcome to Behind the Knife, the surgery podcast. I'm Jason.
I'm Kevin.
I'm John.
And I'm Scott.
And we have a great show for you today.
Okay, everybody, welcome back. Today's episode, we have a special episode. We're with Dr. Andrea Merrill. She's a fifth-year resident at Mass General Hospital doing research with the New England Journal of Medicine. Andrea, welcome to Behind the Knife.
Thank you, John. I'm really happy to be here today. Today's episode of Behind the Knife is a very special episode to honor the life and work of surgeon Dr. Carolyn Kaelin, who sadly passed away July 28, 2015, at the age of 54. Born in Syracuse, New York, and raised in New Jersey, Carolyn went on to double major in economics and biochemistry at Smith College in Massachusetts. From there, she pursued her medical degree at Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine, where she also met her husband, Dr. Bill Kaelin, whom she married in 1988. Surgical residency followed at New England Medical Center, where she became pregnant with her first child, her chief year, a pretty novel concept in the year 1990. The story goes that she was pregnant and in labor when she accepted the Best Chief Resident Award at the annual surgery dinner. Needless to say, her acceptance speech was brief.
After residency, she chose a career in breast surgery because it allowed her to form long-term relationships with her patients in a complex and relatively new specialty at that time. She excelled in her field both with her patients in the operating room and in research, and in 1995, by age of 34, she became the founding director of the Comprehensive Breast Health Center at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston, Massachusetts. With this promotion, she paved the way for women in surgical leadership roles by becoming the youngest woman ever to hold this high role at a major Harvard-affiliated hospital. In this position, she continued to make headlines and was even named one of Newsweek's Women of the Century in early 2001.
Unfortunately, life threw a curveball at Kaelin in 2003 when she switched roles and became the patient after diagnosing her own breast cancer. After undergoing several operations and chemotherapy, she lost sensation in her fingers and was unable to operate. Instead of getting discouraged, she focused on her research, patient education, and co-authored two books on breast cancer entitled Living Through Breast Cancer and the Breast Cancer Survivor's Fitness Plan.
And then, unfortunately, tragedy struck again, this time in the form of brain cancer, a glioblastoma, which she was diagnosed in 2010. After enduring two very big surgeries, chemotherapy, radiation, experimental treatment, she passed away 4.5 years later at her home, surrounded by loved ones.
While the surgeon community and those that knew her are still mourning her loss, her legacy and inspiration continues to live on. Even more powerful than her work and skill was her personality. She has been described as bright with a wonderful sense of humor. She was fearless and never backed away from any challenge in her life, said her husband in an interview after her passing. He went on to add, knowledge, strength, and grace would define Carolyn.
And today on Behind the Knife, we are fortunate enough to be able to talk with several people whose lives were touched by Dr. Carolyn Kaelin.
Our first guest is Dr. Mara Golshan.
Today, we're fortunate to have Dr. Mara Golshan, who is a colleague of Dr. Kaelin's and also the medical director of the International Oncology Program at the Dana-Farber and Brigham Women's Cancer Center. Thank you, Dr. Golshan, for joining us today.
Thank you. That was a mouthful, I'm sure.
Yeah. Thank you, sir, for joining us.
So I think we'll start out by asking you, what is your favorite memory of Dr. Kaelin?
So, you know, there can't just be one single favorite memory, but, you know, when I think of Dr. Kaelin, it's when I first came to interview for a position at the Brigham and Women's Hospital, and I was fortunate to be able to have lunch with her at Holman's Library in the Department of Surgery, and she had come in from, you know, a busy day in the operating room between cases, and she had arranged her schedule so that she would have about half an hour to 45 minutes with me, and it was just very awe-inspiring to sit across from her. And, you know, I'm completing my fellowship, and she's somebody who was one of the youngest, if not the youngest, directors of a comprehensive breast program in the country. And just being able to have lunch with her and talk to her one-on-one was probably my favorite moment.
I guess, sir, going back to, you know, these memories you have of Dr. Kaelin, how do they currently inspire you as a surgeon and a researcher?
So I think the biggest inspiration I get for thinking about Dr. Kaelin is, it's, believe it or not, it's like when I walk in the hospital, there are so many people that currently work at the Brigham or Dana-Farber who were personally touched by Dr. Kalin, whether as her, as their physician and patient relationship or how she interacted with them. She cared about everybody, whether, you know, they came from means or had absolutely no access to funds or healthcare. She would always want to know not only their name, where they came from, how their kids are doing. And when I walk in the hospital, in the last couple of weeks, everyone comes up and tells me, you know, their favorite, Dr. Kalin interaction or story. And it's just amazing the number of people she's touched from so many different walks of life. And that's just here at the hospital.
Yeah, it sounds like she was a really inspiring person from what I've read and from hearing from you. There's been a lot written about her in the news recently, obviously. If you had to pick just three words to describe her, what words would you pick?
Yeah, I don't know if you could ever see, give just three words, but she is extraordinarily intelligent, very gracious, and I would say, you know, she has a deep sense of kindness that you don't see very often anymore in 2015.
Yeah, so, you know, just listen, I had never personally met Dr. Kalin, but, you know, hearing a lot of people telling her that exact same way gives me a very good picture how she actually was. Now, you know, I like to step back in 2003, and Dr. Kalin was unfortunately diagnosed with breast cancer at that time. How did her approach to research change at that time? Did it change at all?
Well, when she was diagnosed with breast cancer, obviously she had to kind of deal with the cancer that was affecting her, and to be someone who's a thought leader and one of the leading breast surgeons in the country to have to undergo the procedure, and not just the procedure, but the procedures multiple times. And you know, she started with breast conserving therapy and eventually needed a mastectomy. That was really a challenging time for her, but she just didn't stop there, even though she stopped operating and taking care of patients in the operating room. She just turned that to taking care of patients outside of the operating room. So she's, you know, wrote or co-wrote two books that have really become, I don't know, I said the word text or textbook. They're really for our patients. They're kind of the textbooks of how the journey of breast cancer begins and how they get through it. So that she wrote one called, I think, Living Through Breast Cancer, and the other one was the Breast Cancer Survivor and Fitness Plan. And those are books that my patients and patients around the country and around the world read. She, set up many meetings for women who've been diagnosed with breast cancer, dealing with the various complications of breast cancer, for example, lymphedema, and quality of life after breast cancer surgery. And, you know, I was fortunate to be invited to a few of them to help talk and participate. And just the way she, you know, brought people into a room and a setting and was able to discuss the, you know, most complex aspects of breast cancer care and make it so easy for people to understand was a gift of hers. And so even though she may not be able to cut out the tumor, she was definitely able to, you know, help with all the things that happen around a breast cancer diagnosis. And I think one of the things that we always have to remember as surgeons is it's not just about what we do in the operating room. It's a very multidisciplinary disease with medical oncology, radiation oncology, reconstruction, breast imaging, breast pathology, social work. And she was someone who could bring all that together, and that's why she had the title of director of the Comprehensive Breast Health Center and not, you know, just head of breast surgery.
Thank you very much for the answer. It sounds like this diagnosis, although very unfortunate, kind of helped her put herself and her patients shoes, which is very helpful as a breast surgeon, talking to the patients, because in my interactions with them, a lot of times they have a lot of anxieties and concerns, and it sounds like she's really able to reach them on that level because she fully understood it, and probably was able to provide a lot more for them in their minds than even just surgery. It's pretty amazing. So it sounds like she was sort of a pioneer in her field at that time when she started this comprehensive breast cancer center. It was a pretty newer concept. You know, now we have them all over, but at that time there weren't as many. And to be the first female, the youngest female of that role in the Harvard system is pretty amazing. Definitely an inspiration for young female surgeons. What sort of advice do you think she'd have for young surgeons right now?
You know, I think she was someone who very eloquently and elegantly was able to balance life. You know, she's obviously a very sought after breast surgeon. Her husband is a world authority oncology researcher. Yet, you know, when you talk to her, the first things that she would always talk about were Catherine Grace and William or Tripp, her two children. So, you know, managing one of the busiest breast cancer surgery practices in the country, and yet being able to be intimately involved in her children's education and them growing up, and you know, the success of that is that, you know, one just graduated from Yale, and I think one just started at Yale, is that you can just you can see the passion that she had both at work and at home.
Well, thank you again, Dr. Gulshan, for taking the time to join us on Behind the Knife. You're the first of multiple people we're going to have on the podcast to honor Dr. Kaelin.
Next on today's special episode, we have Mary Ness Gratian, a nurse practitioner who worked with Dr. Kaelin at Brigham and Women's Hospital. Mary, thank you so much for calling in.
Happy to chat with you this morning.
Hi, Mary. This is John McClellan speaking from Behind the Knife. Now, I understand you worked with Dr. Kaelin from 1998 to 2003. This is only a few years after she had been named the founding director of the Comprehensive Breast Health Center at Brigham and Women's Hospital. You know, what kind of qualities do you think that helped her make such a great fit for this role?
So she, I believe, started in her role here in 1997, and I actually met her at a nurse practitioner educational program where she did a program on breast cancer treatment and so forth, and announced at that talk that they were looking to hire their first NP for this role here. And, you know, after the talk, she had multiple people wanting to speak with her because she was a really very engaging speaker. And when she was acting in the role here, she was very, she was a great leader. So there was no sort of confusion about what the plans were. She always was very clear about where we were moving and what she wanted to see to happen for patient care in the best way for the patients. And I think that was one of the things that came through always with her.
That's great. It sounds like that was definitely the right fit for her. I know she was pretty young, and it was pretty monumental when she got that role, being the youngest female to ever have gotten that high of a position at a Harvard hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you remember most about her approach to breast cancer treatment and her interactions with her patients?
So I think one of the things was that always to leave the opportunity for patients to be able to make decisions with her, but also she had in her interactions with her patients, she always was able to, I think, make patients feel that she was their only concern. So when she was sitting in the room with a patient, nothing else was interfering with that. She always was very focused on what their specific issues were and how things were going to impact them going forward. So I think people always felt really well cared for in that regard. And I think that personal touch was really a very important feature to how she managed care for her patients.
So, yeah, I know that's hard to do when you're so busy all the time. I'm sure you can relate, Mary, with like how, you know, you're seeing a bunch of patients all the time. You have all your other obligations to everybody else. And it's very important to make that patient, you know, the number one priority when you're talking to them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, having worked with her for about, you know, 5-6 years, you know, and you briefly touched on this. What stands out to you most about her personality?
As a person, I think, you know, again, I think she was always striving for the highest quality that we could provide for people and looking to move things forward for patients. Like, for instance, and I'm sure I've seen this even in print elsewhere since her passing, but one of the things that she was very involved in, you know, like at the time, people were still getting standard axillary dissections for invasive breast cancer, and there was a lot of people sort of encouraging patients not to be particularly active because of the risk for lymphedema and those kinds of things. And I think, you know, at that point, she was involved in working with people to keep patients as active as they could be. She was involved in this Row with One project and involved in setting up that program with the YMCA to really help patients to be able to maintain their highest level of activity even after they had surgery. And I think that was sort of an important piece, just trying to keep people able to maintain their lifestyle. I don't know if that answered the question.
No, that's perfect.
No, that's perfect. It sounds like she was also pretty active as well. We've heard a lot about Dr. Kalin as a surgeon, but what do you remember most about her outside of the operating room in the office?
Well, I think exactly what we talked about in terms of being focused on patient care. You know what I mean? She obviously was a very young person, had a young family, and was very busy. And anybody who is working in this kind of arena knows how busy your life is just here. But layer onto that, you know, trying to take care of two small kids and have a life outside of here. And I think that was always trying to keep things organized so that you could do the best that you could at each one of those roles.
Now, Mary, I know you've been involved with the, you know, the breast center and at Brigham Women's Hospital for a while. Is that right?
Since I started working with Dr. Kalin in 1998, I've been here. Yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, you've seen a lot of surgical trainees come through. From all your experience, what's the one message you can probably pass on to those people who kind of come in and train with you?
Well, I mean, I think that things change over time. You know, our practice changes over time, standard of care changes over time, but the one thing that remains the same is to not lose sight of the patient and what the patient's needs are, you know, because what's right for one person isn't going to be right for the next person, and sometimes you have to go with what's going to be the right thing for that individual person, you know.
All right. Well, thank you, Mary, again, for taking time to join us on Behind the Knife. Our next interview is with Dr. Esther Rhee.
Hi, welcome back to Behind the Knife podcast. We have our special edition today honoring Dr. Carolyn Kalin. Today we have Dr. Esther Rhee calling in from the Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston, Massachusetts. Thank you, Dr. Rhee, for calling in.
Thank you.
So we'll just start out some basic questions about your background. How long have you worked at the Brigham Women's Hospital?
So I had Dr. Kalin had recruited me immediately after my fellowship at Memorial Sloan Kettering, and that was back in 1998. And so I've been there since that time. I am currently the medical director of the breast center at the Brigham Women's Hospital for the past few years. But Carolyn pretty much plucked me out of fellowship immediately following.
That's wonderful. You know, we were going to ask you how you first met Dr. Kalin, but it sounds like she actually recruited you. Which is great.
Did.
Yeah. Now, when she was recruiting you, and you probably heard about her before, she asked you to come up and visit. What was her first impression of Dr. Kalin?
Well, in actuality, my husband was looking for a position as an orthopedic surgeon, and then he and I emigrated up here from New York City, and that's when she tried to recruit me. And let me tell you something: she is a very, very strong, strong-willed person, very intelligent. She knows what she wants, and so when she met me, and she said pretty much, particularly because I'm engaged as far as the Latin communities. I speak Spanish, and so she was trying to run a clinic for, you know, the disadvantaged and underserved patients, and so she was very interested in opening that. And so when she contacted me and she heard that I spoke Spanish, she was very actively trying to engage me to try to come here. So she, you know, for her, It was all about the patient and all about making things easier for patients, both from a cancer standpoint and from a personal standpoint. She really was a true patient advocate, and I think that is one of the greatest strengths of hers. I mean, she has so many, but she has so many great strengths. But I think the greatest one is that she is a true patient advocate. When she recruited me, she would ask me a lot of questions, obviously, about my background, but she would also ask about me personally as to what I enjoyed and what I thought about, you know, taking care of breast cancer patients. And so we seemed to click, and a lot of the things that I said she felt resonated with her philosophy about taking care of patients. So I've been here since that time, and I've been very fortunate.
Yeah, it sounds pretty like a great experience and a great time to be recruited for that. She'd just been appointed the director of the Breast Cancer Center, which is kind of a novel concept at that time. She probably had time to see the beginning phases and how it's grown. What can you say to comment on that effect?
That is absolutely correct. She was a pioneer pretty much in the area. You know, there was no concentrated breast center here, and she really was pivotal in coordinating and streamlining care with all the patients, you know, between all the disciplines. I mean, breast disease, breast cancer is a truly multidisciplinary team that is required to take care of that patient. You know, it's medical oncology as well as surgeons, radiation oncology. There's psychology, there's social work, pathology. I mean, it is a whole host of disciplines that really need to have input into taking care of the patients. And so she really was the person who really kind of combined all of those, all of the disciplines together so that we can make, you know, a world-class comprehensive breast program. So when she was, when she first came, you know, I don't know if she was the youngest, but she was very young. But she was a force to be reckoned with, and she truly made a program into a fabulous world-known program.
So you worked with her for how many years?
Ever since I came here, which was in 1998.
Ever since you came here. Mm-hmm. Okay. And did you notice that her approach to care with her patients changed after she got her unfortunate diagnosis of breast cancer?
She actually did not return afterwards, you know, so she, so she was unable to do that. But rather than return to the clinical setting, she still was very actively engaged in helping breast cancer patients. You know, she developed an exercise program. I think she had a DVD that was manufactured through Reebok. And she would lecture to all different cancer groups. She had different breakfasts for for some of the underprivileged women who had breast cancer, and she gave them an opportunity to kind of speak with her and had a really nice breakfast on lunch with them. I mean, so she continued to be active in the breast cancer community, just not as a clinician.
Okay. Really amazing that she used her diagnosis and her disease to continue to help women with breast cancer and to continue to work in some way.
I'm sure that she would, you know, because she was already compassionate even before. So I'm sure now that she could add her personal experience, I think that would be particularly impactful for patients who spoke with her.
Yeah, I can imagine that was probably a big deal for a patient to, you know, seeing somebody, physician that has helped treating her, you know, go through the same process and it'd be there to support them as well. I bet that was very, very helpful for a lot of patients that she treated. Ma'am, Dr. Reed, how did she influence your own practice on breast care? I know she already had this set up before you got up there. And when you came out of fellowship, how did you think that Dr. Kalin influenced your practice?
It was actually pretty much still in the genesis of becoming a true breast center.
Oh, okay.
So we sort of built it together, but obviously she had the experience and was able to help guide me. But, you know, just seeing how she spoke with patients, how she could break bad news to patients, the continued compassion afterwards, those are things that that I think those are take-home messages that you take with you and try to impart to your patients. And you know, the main main thing is to truly care about the patient. And she showed that, and she was warm and kind to them. And, you know, you see that, and you see it in practice. You see the results afterwards. And so those are the things that I take home when I think about her.
And how about for all young physicians out here, and Dr. Merrill and I are both still in training, what things should we take away from Dr. Kalin as like to incorporate our own, you know, our own future of medicine?
I think that, you know, she was a very skilled surgeon. I think for the surgical residents or medical students who are interested in going into surgery is to remember that along with the skills that you learn from surgery, you should also maintain the skills that you have to be a compassionate doctor. And, you know, there's always that joke about how, you know, surgeons don't have good bedside manners. Well, she actually defied that, and she was a skilled surgeon and had a wonderful bedside manner. So I think that in the day-to-day, when, you know, we become so busy in our hectic lives as surgeons, to remember that, you know, to maintain your compassion towards your patients. And that's something that she did practice. And so if you observe her, you try to remember that despite the craziness that you have in your lives as doctors and as surgeons, that you should really maintain your compassion for your patients.
Dr. Reed, thank you again for joining us on our podcast, and we appreciate your time.
No problem. It's my pleasure. Thank you for asking me.
Next, it is our pleasure to welcome Dr. Michael Zinner, Chairman of the Department of Surgery at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston and the Executive Director of the Center for Surgery and Public Health. Thank you for joining us today, Dr. Zinner.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Hi, Dr. Zinner. This is John McClellan from Behind the Knife. Can you explain to our listeners how you first met Dr. Kalin?
Well, it goes back to when I was first recruited to come to Boston. So I came to the Brigham Women's Hospital in 1994, and I had been the previous chairman of surgery at UCLA from 1988 to 1994, and I had established UCLA's first comprehensive breast center at UCLA in Los Angeles. And so when I came in 1994, I was sort of surprised to see that at Brigham there was not a comprehensive breast center, and it was being breast cancer was being cared for in sort of a non-coordinated way. Then one of the senior breast surgeons left the Brigham. And I thought it was a great opportunity for us to establish a breast cancer center at the Brigham in collaboration with the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute. And so I looked around, and I'd heard of this relatively young woman who was in the city at a different hospital, but had great recommendations and credentials. And that's where I first met Carolyn. I'd interviewed several people. And I met her, and she impressed me, really impressed me incredibly with her enthusiasm, her patient caring, her general demeanor, and her approach to breast cancer, which, although today is very common way of dealing with it, which is multidisciplinary care, back 20 years ago, that was not quite as common. And so that's how I ran into her, and I hired her to be the first director of the Brigham and Women's Cancer Center in collaboration with the Dana-Farber.
Well, that's really great to hear. And yeah, I'm thinking about maybe going into breast surgery or something in surgical oncology. So it's really interesting to hear about how the care has changed over the years with the comprehensive breast centers that have popped up at a lot of hospitals. When you met her, you talked about her enthusiasm and her approach to care. But what else do you think made her the right fit for the job as the director and a leader at such a young age?
Well, I wasn't sure she was the right person at that young age. She had not much experience administratively. But we thought we could fly a little air cover for her, support her in that role, and make sure that she took all of her great ideas and were able to apply them to the profession and improve the care for patients in our region. And she exceeded our expectations. She did great. Patients loved her. It was fascinating to hear stories from patients that I would refer to her, that they'd say, you know, Dr. Kalin called me back at 10 o'clock at night to make sure that everything was okay, when I knew that she was, you know, recently married and a new mother, and Dr. Kalin, and you know, her enthusiasm and caring for patients was just unsurpassed.
Yeah, it sounds like you got a chance to, you know, see her evolve through her role at the Comprehensive Breast Health Center. What other leadership qualities did Dr. Kalin have that even just the staff themselves were attracted to?
Her dedication, her hard work, her patient caring, her enthusiasm. She rarely asked of others what she did not do herself.
Great. And you also mentioned that she brought some new great ideas to the Breast Health Center. What were some of these new ideas that she brought and implemented?
Well, they were mostly about patient experience. So when she herself developed breast cancer, she began to change just both the combination of patient and physician. And she realized that there were so many more things outside of traditional aspects of medicine and caring that she could bring to her patients. So she introduced things like exercise programs. She introduced diet programs. I mean, she became fully, fully engaged in the total care of the breast cancer patient. And she did that all the way up until the time she passed away.
Dr. Zinner, what advice do you think that Dr. Kalin would have for all residents throughout the country? And what could we all learn from Dr. Kalin?
Remember why we're in this business in the first place. It's patients first. And until we get everybody to understand that, medicine's still going to struggle with some of the, you know, the ideas that others may have for us. She always put her patients first, and that's the way it should be.
I think that's very important advice to pass along to the residents today and to all doctors today as well in this busy atmosphere that we're practicing in. I think a lot of times it gets lost.
I totally agree. It gets lost in some things that, you know, I'm going to sound like an old codger, this one, but it gets lost in things like duty hours, and it gets lost in mm-hmm. things like reimbursement, and it gets lost in things that, you know, really take away from why we entered the field in the first place.
Well, thank you, Dr. Zinner, for joining us on Behind the Knife, and also for giving us a great snapshot into the life of Dr. Kalin. She truly was an amazing person. Behind the Knife also wants to thank Dr. Andrea Merrill for helping put all this together. She did a wonderful job of getting us organized so that we could speak to all the interviewers that knew Dr. Kalin so well. You can find Dr. Merrill on Twitter with the handle @ANJLM7. Once again, you know we always like to hear any questions or comments from all of our episodes, so send them our way. And keep a heads up for our new website. It's currently in development. We'll see you next time on Behind the Knife. Dominate the day.